Hello, this is Dr. Alphonse Javed. As we draw near to the end of 2025, I would like to highlight the top five our Urban Voices podcasts of the year. This year, we have had a great variety of topics from people serving among Muslims to women in pregnancy crisis to youth in gangs and drugs to the mission of the church to self-care for ministry workers to technology like hybrid congregations and AI in the church. Enjoy the top five podcasts of the year and browse oururbanvoices.com for other great podcasts.
Healthy churches are also discipling people inside of the church so that we don't have to export the mission of God to others, and instead actually see our own people living on mission with God in their everyday life.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javed. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Josh Hayden. Josh Hayden is the co-founder and co-president of EVA Collaborative, which helps leaders fly high and live low as they lead through change processes in their community. He is also the senior pastor of First Baptist Church in Ashland, Virginia. Josh has recently authored Remissioning Church, a field guide to bring a congregation back to life, where he talks about transforming a church from the inside out to bring a new missional presence that brings life and flourishes to the neighborhood. This will be an interesting conversation. Why? Well, I tell you, because he is a senior pastor. He is senior pastor. I'm senior pastor. I think we got something going on here, and we both love Jesus, and we love to see the church grow. So here is our guest today. Thank you for joining us today, Josh. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm so incredibly grateful to be here with you today, Alphonse. Thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
So, Josh, this is what I do with all of my guests. I start with the introduction, not yours, but your family's. And here's the deal why I do that. I do that because I think it provides a good connection point for our listeners, because I think when we connect on human level, they are able to hear our stories. They are able to hear our ideas, because they know that we are human. We deal with everyday issues too. So let's start with that. Share a little bit about your family, and just help us to understand your family life before we get into your professional life.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife Shay and I actually met in high school. We dated while we went to separate colleges, got married right after college. We've been married for over 20 years. In that time, I served for 11 years in a church plant and over 10 years now in an established church helping remission it. Honestly, the last 3 years of pastoring in the context of my family have been three of the most joy-filled years I've ever had serving in a church. I run remissioning trainings through an organization called EVA Collaborative, and I'll share a little bit more about them later. But the big thing that we do is we help leaders to see the big picture and then lead through change on the ground. We have two sons. My youngest son, Eli, is a soccer and track athlete. And my oldest son, Rowan, who was an amazing soccer referee and student, actually passed away at the start of this year in 2025 due to the flu. And so it's actually been a devastating loss for our family. It's been strange to have the joy of releasing a book that has really been so important for my family and our church, and simultaneously navigating really deep sorrow and grief. We've been so incredibly loved by our church and our community. And my family is like so many families that are trying to sort out complicated things that happen in life that really disrupt everything. But in the midst of that, we have an incredible church family that's loving us through some really, really difficult season.
May the Lord be with you and your family. May He give you strength and endurance. And may He be the source of constant peace and comfort in your life, man. That's big.
Thank you.
And I'm sure some of our listeners can relate to that. Losing a child, doesn't matter what age, it's a very, very difficult thing to deal with. But at the same time, it does show us that ministry goes on. God is still doing what he was doing before we were born, before the foundation of the earth, as Ephesians tells us. So I'm glad that you are still helping the church, you are still serving the church, and you're still in the ministry. But this is something only God's going to heal. So let's transition into this podcast episode is about your book. So your new book has an intriguing title, Remissioning Church, a Field Guide to Bringing a Congregation Back to Life. As pastors, we are saddened to think of a church or congregation dying. In what ways are congregation dying, and what do you think might be some reasons for that?
Yeah, what a great question to get us started. You know, I think many churches and congregations have moved into survival modes, and they've kind of long forgotten what it's like to produce lasting, sustainable, good tasting fruit that our neighbors would actually find really helpful and nourishing for the community at large. Lots of churches, even large churches with lots of people, often spend so much of their time counting, that is counting money and people and events and programs and activities, that they lose sight of whether or not the disciples they're making actually reflect the Jesus they are invited to grow in imitation of over the course of their lives. So churches are struggling, they're dying because they want to have new people take steps of leadership, but they actually rarely invite people to lead. And they even less rarely invite people to apprentice leaders to learn how to serve and to lead in their context. And then most often they kind of just check the box of whether or not they've completed a task or done this worship service that was important at some point in their church's history. But they don't regularly stop and ask the question if they're growing the kinds of disciples that reflect God's heart for the church and our neighbors. I think all other churches are, they also get so afraid of conflict. And one of the reasons they get stuck or start to die is that they are numbing themselves with traditions that they don't really know how to escape from, that they're just stuck in, and they've lost sight of what it means to even really know their neighbors in a deep way in their context. And so they don't know how to grow in a healthy way with their neighbors coming to faith because they've lost sight of who their neighbors even are.
Yeah. Yeah. And how has your journey in ministry influenced the writing of this book?
Yeah. So for me, I've served both in a church plant and in an established church. And I learned how to start new things and also how to lead through change, and kind of holding those things together has been such a gift. I found that in the church plant where there aren't established patterns of relationship, you have to really think deeply about who you are and who you want to become. But in established churches, you get to journey with people who see beyond the latest fads. They're like, oh yeah, like they have a long enough history to remember that things do change. And they actually want to do something that lasts. And so I think learning how to hold that kind of initiative, creative, out-of-the-box thinking that I learned in a church plant with a group of people who like, hey, we've been here for, like, the church I serve is over 165 years old. And so it's not looking to just do what it's always done. But it doesn't want to throw out everything that it's learned along the way.
Yeah. But before we move to the next question, which is actually, of course, we want to talk. I still want to talk about this title a little more, because as I said, that is a intriguing title. It's different. But before we get to that, I do want the audience, because I'm pretty sure not everybody understands the difference between a church or a church plant. Church plant makes more, that's common. But the idea of established church is not common. So why don't you take a moment, maybe make a statement or two about an established church. What differentiate established church from any other church?
Yeah. So a church plant is something that is just getting started, usually less than 5 years old. It doesn't necessarily have a structure and policy manuals and all those kinds of things. It's just getting started. Sometimes there's a denomination that helps it to get started with some money and resources, but you're really beginning something from scratch, starting something new. But an established church is something that's been around, a church community that's been around for at least 5 to 7 years. And usually by that time, they've already started to create some ruts, some places where they've gotten stuck, and they need some help thinking about how to get unstuck from some of the patterns in their relationships and ways they've related to their community. Or sometimes a church gets started and they're like, oh, we have this like brilliant idea that we think is going to make a huge difference in our community, only to realize that they didn't actually ask their neighbors if their neighbors wanted those
I
things or
love
if it
that.
was going to be a big help. And so an established church is a church that's been around long enough to have gotten stuck. And that usually only takes about 5 to 7 years. But many of the established churches I work with have been around for 50, 100. There's churches I work with in the UK, they're actually like 500 years old.
Thank you for giving that brief summary so people can understand what we are talking about. So let's go back to the title of the book. Before we get to the book, I really want to explore the title itself. That's the, usually when you pick a book, it's the title. If the title is intriguing, people are like, oh, I'm gonna look into that. What this all about, right? So the book is titled Remissioning Church. Now, why not? Why not revitalizing church or bringing about church revival or, I don't know, rebirthing the church? Why not something like that? What is the difference in your view? Why are you using this term? What is this remissioning and why remissioning?
This is one of my favorite questions, and so I'm glad that you picked up on it because there is a reason why I'm using remissioning and not revitalization. Remissioning is this process of inside out transformation of the church through discipleship for the sake of our neighbors and world. It's this steady, purposeful, dedicated process that involves the transformation of the leaders themselves and the church together for the sake of their community. And remissioning is different from revitalization because revitalization is refreshing an existing church to do its current work with more clarity and usually with a goal of numeric growth or to create some efficiency. To revitalize is to work harder, smarter, and more efficiently on existing programs and events to help the church increase in its relevance to the community to make a bigger impact. But remissioning churches are wrestling with a different question. They're asking, like, if people gathered in our building, fell into a sinkhole, disappeared, would our community notice if we're gone? But a revitalizing church is asking, what can we do to bring more people into our programs and events with greater clarity and purpose? I think revitalizing a church is kind of like updating an app on your favorite device. Revitalization helps the individual programs to run more smoothly, use less battery, crash less often, work more efficiently. But remissioning is actually upgrading the entire operating system so that all the apps, the messaging, the processes will fit into a new system, work in sync with multiple different devices and with people across the world. Remissioning churches are asking more complicated questions because they're usually more stuck. Remissioning churches ask complicated questions about how to translate the gospel through their life experiences and relationships and scripture through the spirit that's still speaking. To remission is to figure out where the church has lost the plot, where it's actually gotten so disconnected from its neighbors that it doesn't know how to gospel in a way that is good for people who they're actually in relationship with. Remissioning leaders also recognize that their churches bear responsibility to their own Jesus followers to begin to grow the kinds of disciples who will go to our neighbors where they are, rather than first saying, hey, you need to come to what we're doing. We're making the kinds of disciples that go out first. Remissioning leaders are usually asking things like, who are my neighbors? Where has the Spirit already gone ahead of us? How do we catch up? Remissioning is learning how to repent and walk a new life for the sake of our community. It's not that revitalizing churches might not need to do some of these things, but usually they're kind of already going along pretty well. And they're just trying to ask, how do we take our existing programs, events, and activities and just spruce them up a bit. But remissioning is saying, actually, we have like a core problem. Like the whole of our church needs to be looked at, not just a couple of our programs and events.
I like the illustration. I'm sure other people have told you the same thing because that's like brilliant. The app versus the operating system itself. I love that. And my next question has to do with the leadership of the church and assessing the church and all that. But to get to that question, let me go back and ask you this question. Are you the only one who's talking about this, or you hear this remissioning idea or this view from other people too? Are you hearing from other people?
Yeah, so I've been a part of some revitalizing kinds of organizations, but remissioning was born out of my doctoral work, where I was asking the questions like, can a group of people, church, a business, a nonprofit, made up of some Christian people, can they embrace the cross as a pathway to new life?
Yeah.
And I realized that revitalization is sort of like, how do we take something that's already going along and just make it a little bit better? And it usually is connected to like the glory days of an organization's existence. For me, remissioning was not a word that people were using with any regularity. No. And so for me, this was saying that the reason why most of the revitalization efforts don't work is because the kinds of disciples inside of the church are stuck. And just making it a more efficient app isn't going to fix the operating system problem.
So what I'm hearing is you probably, at least to your knowledge, you are the only person, or perhaps in your own knowledge, you're probably the only one who is talking about this subject the way you are, or at least the word, production of this word and the definition of the word and what it means, you are looking at this. That's amazing, man. So is it remissioning or is it remissioning? Which one is it? Because, remissions, cancer comes back. Or remissioning, where you are.
Yeah.
Is it remissioning or remissioning?
Yeah, absolutely great question. You're the first one that's asked me that. It's so good. So I would say that it is the second iteration. It's the translation of that original mission that the church might have had when it first got started. Every church was a church plant at some point. And then it becomes an established church, Lord willing, but it gets stuck somewhere. And so the difference between remissioning to me and revitalization also is that revitalization sometimes doesn't take an honest look about whether or not our traditions might be one of the reasons why we're stuck. And so remissioning says, hey, we want to honor our tradition, but we don't want to worship it. And so it's regularly asking the question, how do we take the heartbeat of what it looked like to do this work in the past and then translate that mission into what's next, which is why it's remissioning. I don't think most organizations didn't have a mission when it got started, but it got lost somewhere along the journey. And so it's helping a church honestly look at what needs to die so that new life can be born, which is a remissioning journey. It is connected to that. Yep. To that work around, like cancer. I mean, remission also means that there's a form of a kind of growth or virus or cancer that needs to die in order for our body to be healthy again. And remissioning is a broad enough word that it actually can hold that tension of honoring our past while also saying that some things need to die so that resurrection is possible. And so it's the fullness of both things put together.
I love the way you threw the word resurrection right there, right?
Yeah.
Because even if you look through the lens of an expert or assessment tool, through either one of those, you're going to see, okay, something got to die in order to experience resurrection. You can't just continue to live the way, you can't be in a vegetative state. In order to see the glory of Christ, you got to let go and just see what he got for you. I love the way there are a lot of those ideas behind this word and the phrase, or the way you're, that's what my impression was. I was like, I think he is doing something there. So it's intriguing. Again, the word intrigue. Intrigue comes back.
That's right.
So how does the leadership of a church assesses if the church should be remissioned? Are there common signs or symptoms?
Yeah. It really helps if the leadership of a church is aware of where the church is at in the life cycle. Is it still growing and sorting things out? Is it at a place of stability or plateau? Is it experiencing decline, a lot of dropout? Is it nearing death? And this isn't just a numeric thing, like are people leaving or staying? It's actually a question about the spiritual health of the church or whether or not the church has a lot of meaningful connection and relationship with the community. It's important to count things, but it's also really important to measure things, and those aren't always the same. And so it's really helpful if a leader is able to be honest with themselves about where the church is on a life cycle, because it helps to identify a clearer path back into health. It clarifies a path of how much death is necessary for resurrection to occur. Not every church has to completely go away. A really helpful way to kind of think about this is like think about the different ways we listen to music or watch movies. Like those things have changed a lot over time. When a leader is able to assess where their church is and the places where they've gotten stuck, you can create a clearer pathway back to new life when you know where you're at on that life cycle. The problem is that sometimes the leader and the church don't agree where they're at on the life cycle. And that's usually where it takes some time to just kind of sit and pay attention to what the Spirit's inviting people to consider and be honest about perhaps the decline or dropout that they're experiencing, and be honest about how much rigorous change is going to be necessary to be healthy again.
Yeah. As I'm hearing you, there's another wonderful brother. I had him on my podcast. He passed away very recently. He was with the Unstuck, that network.
Oh
He was
yeah,
the
Unstuck Group,
founder.
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I had him on the show too. A great man, great wisdom again. And I remember even then thinking about when we were talking about this whole idea of assessments. I think usually churches just don't have time. Even I remember like him sending, and still his organization still does that. They send out
Yeah.
those assessment surveys, and they ask churches do this, and in return we get some sort of report or something. It's good for us
Sure.
too. But I remember thinking on this, like, hey, so what it would look like, you're talking about leaders needs to be honest, the pastor needs to be honest, but the church, but the problem is the tension between the church, where they see themselves and where the leader thinks that we are,
Yeah.
is that the negotiation that needs to be
Yes.
honest, it needs to come together. But right there, as pastors, we know much of our time is spent managing feelings, right?
Yes.
So how to do this honestly, because if you are not managing feeling and you are going with this, like, hey, we got to do this, it becomes all, well, you are too much into, which is a one, I think that's also a wrong thing. It's extreme idea that, oh, you are looking into these worldly things. We just need to pray. We just need to preach the word and pray. Preach the word, pray, and things will happen. And then you have this
Yeah.
whole idea like, yeah, but you gotta, I go to doctor. Every
Yeah.
time I go to doctor, my heartbeat is like, I don't know what he's going to tell me now. I don't know what he's going to tell me now. But the truth is, whatever it is I need to know, I need to know in order to see where I'm going and care for that. So where do we stop as leaders? By the way, my next question to you is, what does a healthy church look like? So I'm leading to that question. So giving you a little space to think about my question while I'm building my premise, I guess. So
Sure.
where does that stop making managing feeling and making everybody feel okay before we move into that? Because death is going to happen no matter what. And if I'm wasting my time, I'm not talking about my church, but I'm just giving
Yeah.
example. Maybe a pastor is listening to this and he is dealing with this same issue. And he's like, okay, man, I don't know what to do. My church, I love my church. I want this church to grow. Of course, every pastor wants the church to grow, but he's stuck. He's stuck with his love for the church. He's stuck with leadership. He's stuck with the congregation. And now he's like, I don't know, man. I've been just managing. I just look back 30 years ago, and I'm still managing feelings. So where does that stop? That so that the
Yeah.
church can experience resurrection and move forward. So there's my question. What
Yeah.
does a healthy church look like?
Yeah. So I think an important part of this journey in remissioning is that you're helping people to navigate loss and change, which is going to bring up anger, fear, frustration, embarrassment, shame. Some of the things in my own church context, when they became aware of ways that they weren't loving well their neighbors across like race and culture, it produced a tremendous amount of shame in them, which on the surface looked like anger, but actually underneath the surface was embarrassment and a kind of stuckness that was really overwhelming for them. And so our job as a pastor and leader isn't to shut down those feelings, but to help people to bring those feelings and concerns before God and each other and learn how to like invite the Spirit to do the necessary heart work in their lives. Because the truth is most churches are operating out of feelings all the time. The reality though is that no one's given them space to bring those feelings as an act of discipleship, to ask God, how do I need to deal with these in a way that is good for me and the community in which I'm rooted? And so probably the biggest secret of the remissioning process is that you actually have to learn how to embrace conflict as a blessing from God for the good of you as a leader and your church. Avoiding conflict is one of the worst things a leader can do. I don't mean that you need to fight all the time. Dallas Willard says that, your organization's perfectly designed to get the results it's getting. Another adaptive leadership model is that you have to dis adaptive leadership is disappointing people at a rate they can absorb. Good pastoral leadership is recognizing that when those feelings of anxiety or concern or people spiritualize something that's actually a relational problem, like, oh, let's just pray about this. Well, yeah, we can pray about it, but I'm really sh like confident the Spirit's asking you to go deal with this conflict in this relationship. Prayer is a way to get our hearts ready for it, but you still have to talk. And good leadership recognizes that's all part of the discipleship journey. You don't have to avoid one in order to try to get healthy or grow your church again. You actually need all of that in order to get to the real work of making the kinds of disciples that learn to navigate change. And so I think a healthy church looks like a people who have a very clear sense of how its particular way of making disciples is good for the community that it's rooted in. So if your community really cares about education, but your church doesn't ever talk about how the good news of God helps educate children, your neighbors might not be able to hear the good news from your community because they don't think that you care about some of the things they care about. And I realize that you can't care about everything your neighbors care about, but your church should have some way that it lives out the gospel in the context of its community in a way that your neighbors can understand. This means that the church has to know itself well enough to say, okay, this is what a mature disciple looks like, and this is how we know if they're bearing fruit. And this is how we know that our community is experiencing flourishing based on the way we have a common life together. The healthy church learns to see change as one of the ways that God invites us into this perpetual life, death, and resurrection journey instead of fearing change. Most churches think, all right, the goal is to just get to a place of stability and then stop. We got it. We arrived. But actually, that life, death, and resurrection journey is meant to be forever. It doesn't ever stop. It's the perpetual way that God makes us into more mature imitators of Jesus. Healthy churches are also discipling people inside of the church, so that we don't have to export the mission of God to others and instead actually see our own people living on mission with God in their everyday life. The healthy church sees their people actually living on mission rather than giving mission to someone else.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
Don't export the mission of God to others. That's really cool,
Yeah.
right? Because that's the job of the church. I worked for parachurch ministry. I was a missionary before I took a job as a pastor. For the last
Yeah.
15 years, I've been a pastor, full-time pastor, but before that, I was a missionary. And when I think about this, always as a missionary, it was the same problem. We go to conferences, and the topic was, if the church does their job properly, if the church is doing the job the church is called to do, we don't need mission organization. No, we do need mission organization. I'm not against that. But
Sure,
the
yeah.
idea is parachurch ministries exist to serve the church because church is not doing what it's supposed to do because it's constantly exporting the mission of God to others rather than raising missionaries, raising those disciples who have a missional lifestyle and missional understanding. That's really good. Do not export the mission of God. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
And I there's so many things, even just in this little last comment you made. And I think, and I hope, and I pray that churches begin to look at that, because I think most of the time our problem is, I'm thinking about also pride, right? So you're talking about how under the anger issue is the shame issue, right? But I think with them, somewhere there's this pride that, but, you know, if I acknowledge there is a problem, then what's going to happen to my identity? Because I am this and I'm that. And then I'm saying that I'm wrong. That I'm saying that, yeah, I need change. And there comes the word change. Who likes change? Nobody likes change.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, sucking the surprise out of that will bring change, because now they're on the same page, hopefully.
That's right.
Brilliant. So what is the goal? Let me ask you this. What is the goal of remissioning a church then? So if we got the, let's say we got the, all these, at least in the last one, couple of comments you made, according to those, let's say we are not exporting missionaries, we are seeing something is happening. And finally, let's say the church figured out how to communicate the gospel to the community. By the way, I love the way you are looking at the community. You're not talking about the Christian community. You are talking about the community,
yes,
that where they are placed by the will of God.
Yes.
They, that community needs to be discipled, not just that,
yes,
inner. Because often as pastors, we are constantly focusing on that. The church is focusing on that. And while the people around us are the mission field and always be thinking that we need to reach out to them, but actually what we need to do is we need to disciple them. So I like that idea too, the way you approach,
yeah,
it. But anyways,
yeah,
going back to, so let's say we got these things down, we know that, okay, this is what a healthy church look like. Now, the next thing would be, what is the goal of remissioning church now?
Yeah. So the goal of remissioning is to make the kinds of disciples in our churches who are regularly asking what kinds of relationships, programs, events, and shared ways of being good neighbors, mm-hmm, are necessary for God's kingdom to flourish and transform our community. If a church is thriving and its community is struggling, is that church actually thriving? I would, mm-hmm, say it's not. Because if our larger community isn't experiencing the kingdom of God on earth as in heaven, then our church can't be thriving. So my hope is that a remissioning church will break this cycle of people saying, well, that's not how we do things here. And instead, the goal will become, as we imitate Jesus together, how do we love our neighbors?
Right.
And so it's not a radical idea. It's just recognizing and being honest about how we've lost the plot, how we've missed the through line of what Jesus has invited us to do, yeah, in and through our churches for the good of our community.
So in your book, you talk about inside-out transformation. What needs to happen for a church to change in this way?
Yeah, so, you know, just a moment ago, we talked about that, you know, I think a lot of churches, whether they're established churches or church plants, we often export the mission of God that is actually meant for each of us.
Mm.
We give it to some really incredible organizations all around the world, sometimes even in our own local community. But what's happened is that if you ask most folks in a congregation, if they could identify even just one person in their life that they are discipling in the way of Jesus, I don't know that most folks can name anyone. My hope is that we will disciple people inside of our church to live on mission in the neighborhoods, places of work, in their businesses, in government, on the basketball court, anywhere else they go. And instead of asking other people to do the work of making disciples, we invite our own people inside of the church to live out the mission of God and help others to consider Jesus as Lord as we learn to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So even though you are proposing that we need to care for the community, surrounding community of a church,
yeah,
but still your focus is on the people inside the church. Then, therefore, it's the inside out. Is that right? Did I get,
yes,
it?
Yes. Yeah, so when the people inside of the church learn to live on mission with God, I'm assuming that they live most of the other hours of their life when they're not
outside,
you know, an hour serving in the church, an hour in worship, and an hour in a discipleship, yes, group. I'm assuming the bulk of those other hours when they're not sleeping or somewhere else outside of, it might still be connected to Christian community, but I don't actually want to pull people off the soccer field. I just want them to bring the lens of what does it mean for me to make disciples while my kid's playing soccer?
Right.
Like, why would I want them to not,
Right.
like, I just want them to live with more purpose and intention. I don't want them to stop living in the context of our community. Because if we only spend time with Christian people, the only way our churches grow is through swapping sheep from one church to another. And that's
Right.
not what it means to live on mission with God. And so
Yeah.
the inside out transformation piece is that rather than giving the mission away to everyone else, I want to know, can we make the kinds of disciples in our church that are living on mission? So the center of the mission begins inside of the church and then goes outside of the proverbial walls of the church and
Yeah.
lives in the neighborhood.
That's great. How and why is discipleship the mission of the church? It's always been the mission of the church, but I think nowadays we are hearing about discipleship a lot, especially post-pandemic. So the question is, how and why is discipleship the mission of the church? How does its lack contribute to the decline of a church?
A few things have really stuck out to me as I've worked with churches in various denominations and contexts and countries is that one thing that has surprised me a lot is that a lot of pastors haven't been discipled, so they're not really sure how to talk or lead through discipleship processes in their own church. And so many churches that do talk about discipleship don't talk enough about what a mature disciple in their context looks like. And so you have a the pastor hasn't been discipled, and so they're not really sure what that means. And then churches that do talk about discipleship and maybe even have some good discipleship groups, if you ask them, well, how would we know if our church has been successful in making a good disciple, or what does a mature disciple look like in our context? Most people can't clarify what that would look like in a person's life.
Right.
And so when churches aren't making disciples, we're basically expecting someone else to do the work, to invite non-Christians to become Jesus followers. And then our church is just trying to create the most relevant, exciting, well-branded program and activities and events to win them to our church, which is not really living on mission. It's just trying to, like, outbrand somebody else. But when we disciple people to live on the inside of our church, to live on mission, every single person then becomes a steward of the church and its mission alongside of the leadership. All of us become the group, become the people who are thinking about how do we live with intention. We invite people into our shared life, and we recognize that discipleship doesn't just happen after conversion, but it's a whole journey of our whole lives. When churches aren't clear and they don't have a process for how people can mature in their faith, the way we see this failing is that people just hop from one church to another church to have a felt need met. And then they struggle to measure if people are maturing in their imitation of Jesus because the only thing a church knows how to do is they count. Do we have more people in worship? Do we have more people in discipleship groups? Do we have more money than we used to have before? That is not maturing in Jesus. They can be indicators that something is happening, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are maturing in their faith. I look at this a lot of time with like kids' summer camps. A church will be like, we had 300 kids at our VBS or whatever, our kids' camp. And then when you ask them to kind of drill down in those numbers, well, it's like 80 to 90% are kids from other churches. And those parents are like so thrilled to like have their kid with other Christian kids for hours or a whole day. It's cheaper than daycare for the week. But that's not necessarily living on mission. It's not a bad thing. I'm just saying we need to actually calibrate whether or not it's maturing people to grow as disciples. It's something we can count, but it's not necessarily a maturing process. We also know that there are lots of churches that have lots of numbers, but they are mean. They're mean-spirited, they're difficult, they're judgmental. And so beginning to differentiate between the things we can count and the things we can measure is a helpful way to distinguish why making disciples and having clarity on what it means to be a mature disciple is really important for our churches.
This is good, man. I love what you said, brother or dear. As you're talking about discipleship, the idea that pastors, in at least in your knowledge, in your work, you have found that the pastors are not discipled So therefore, they do not know how it works when they are preaching, even though they are convinced the discipleship is the right thing to do, but they don't know. I think it's a sad thing that often those who are leading are the one who never been led, or they never followed anyone. And when you have that problem, it does create, again, pride. It does create obligation on other people. But what about me? Well, I'm the one who is telling them. And I think that's where it starts. The preacher needs to first do it, show them, and then see them doing how it's done. There are several great books came out recently talking about this whole idea. I do, you watch, I do.
Yes.
That whole phrase four. Absolutely. Some of them have four.
Yes.
And other ones have five of them.
Yeah. Yep.
Nothing. But if you have not done it, how are you going to do it to show other
people? That's right.
Right. So I think that's great. Earlier, you made a comment as you were opening your conversation about this book. You said the phrase is common. So this common reflection question is, if your church disappeared, would the community notice? How can a church be a missional presence in her neighborhood and would be missed if gone?
It's a great start to just begin by asking this question in a church leadership setting.
Yeah.
But the next step is to actually go to community leaders. And by community leaders, I don't mean community of your church. I mean actual people in your community, and ask them this question. And there's a necessary follow-up. If you're going to be brave enough to ask this to a government leader or a business owner or someone in the school system, hey, if our church disappeared, would you notice if we're gone? The follow-up question you need to be ready to ask them is like, well, what's one step that we could take to be a better neighbor with you? And you need to be prepared to act on it. Now, obviously, you need to, hold it up to the Spirit, because depending on what they ask you to do, it may not be feasible, or it might not be the right time, or those kinds of things. I'm not saying just carte blanche, do what they tell you to do. But this is why and where many churches get stuck, is they don't actually take the step. They ask the question, but they don't do anything about it when they become informed about the opportunities. So please don't ask the question of a community leader and then refuse to act. Most community leaders already see churches as a liability instead of an asset in the flourishing of their community. So don't ask the question and then not be prepared to do something about it. Ask the question of your neighbors, listen to their comments, and then take a step to respond. A major mistake that church leaders often make is they'll ask this question and they'll go do it on their own. But don't just do this as a leader. Instead, make sure that you're utilizing even the question asking in your community as an opportunity to make disciples along the way. Bring people with you so that they can also have proximity and presence and relationships with the community in a new way. Because this is actually how we grow and disciple people into having a mission-centric heart in the disciples of our church.
This is awesome. I think the second piece, because I do these interviews all the time, and almost everyone says the same thing, that, hey, you got to go to the community, talk to the community, and listen to what their concerns are. Almost everyone is saying that, which is great. But almost everyone misses the second piece. And I think you are the first one who said you need to ask the follow-up question. And in that question, not only you recommended that we need to ask them what step we can take to improve that. I'm just paraphrasing what you said. But more importantly, bring them into this improvement process. So they are contributors. They are contributing into that process, and they are walking with you. You're walking with them. So it becomes a communal thing. So the barrier between them become less and less over the period of time. I like that approach. Really good. I mean, that's really good for me too, because I've been thinking about the same thing. How to see the next next remissioning in our church, because my mind is such, it works around 5 years plan. Every person has different mindsets. So mine is, I work toward that. So 4 years, and then there's a 1 year of assessment and feedback and looking into, and then as soon that 5th year is coming to end, The next one is launching. Okay, that's going to be the next cycle of 5 years. We're going to work on this.
Great.
And then so I work on that. So that was, I've been praying and thinking about. Actually, as a matter of fact, I'm recording this from a pastoral respite place. I'm supposed to be, this is supposed to be my thing. And I've been thinking about this a lot, what it's going to look like in my church. So I'm glad that we're talking about this. And I'm sure many pastors, even when they take these kind of times away, their brains are still, I can't shut off my brain, man. I wish if I could, but I'm pastor through and through. So whether I'm with my flock or not, I'm still, wherever I am, I'm thinking about how can I do better? How can I serve better? So it's hard for me. I appreciate those brothers who are able to turn it off and just be. It's not me. So I'm very glad for the counsel I've received even as I'm recording this. So we heard from Josh, and I think it's a good topic to explore. So join us next time when Josh Hayden talks about the process of remissioning a church. He told us what it is, what it will take. So he's going to explain the process next time. So with that, thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Pastor Joshua Hayden. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcast.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.